what I see from women as well, I mean, is that we can be more naturally more empathetic. From a woman's perspective, I think that they can be too empathetic to the point that they can lose themselves in it. The majority of women are on the empathetic scale and can be too caring and too involved, and then almost lose themselves in that, you know, that then you're like, well, what's yours and what's mine? I feel other people's emotions greatly, and sometimes that can be just too much. And you have to figure out what is, like, how can I show up and be caring and trying to put myself in someone else's shoes and respectful, but also not give all of myself, because I need to be able to get on with the day as well.
Welcome to the Leadership Junkies podcast, brought to you by Cartavera, the leadership development ecosystem that helps you grow your people, grow your business, and grow your life. We are here with a very special guest today. Jane Finette is with us for Unlocked, empowering women, empowering leadership, empowering change, empowering impact. Jane is a passionate advocate for women and girls and nonprofit leaders, especially in the social change and social impact space. She founded an organization a few years ago called the Coaching Fellowship that does just that, helps empower and advance young women social change leaders. She's got a new book coming out called Unlocked, How Empowered Women Empower Women. And we've got a fascinating conversation about what are the obstacles for women in leadership? How can we break through that, both for women and those who have the ability to empower and put women in places of leadership? And she's going to talk about so many of the blind spots that exist in leadership and ways we can move past them to truly transform leadership for women, for leaders, for organizations, and for change.
Leadership Junkies podcast, where we explore leadership, business, and personal growth to help you grow your business and live a richer life. We're your hosts, Jeff Dischwitz
and Craig Matthews. We believe that leaders have to put their people first. And if you don't have time to grow your people, then you're not leading.
Get ready for conversations that will challenge your thinking and help you transform your leadership and your business.
Welcome to your bigger business and bigger life.
We are thrilled to be back here today because our topic today is empowerment of women, and around social change and social impact. And Craig and I both believe strongly in that and are always looking for ways to do that. And we brought in Jane Finette with us today. She is a passionate advocate for women and girls. She's a nonprofit leader and author. And in 2014, she founded something called the Coaching Fellowship. Now, I've heard names like that before, but then I dug a little deeper, and it is a nonprofit. Now, listen to this. It helps advance young women, social change leaders. So it's not just about young women. It's not just about change. It's that unique combination and their work throughout the world. In fact, more than 1,000 women have now graduated from the program. Wow. In over 70 countries. They started to form something called the Women of Impact Alliance. So Jane is all about impact, empowerment, and, as she'll share, leadership development. She's got a book coming out in August called Unlocked, How Empowered Women Empower Women. I'm going to read this because I just love this. I've never seen anything said this way. Jane has spent her career pushing the boundaries of community building and human potential. She's obsessed with accelerating social change, and she builds flywheel systems. We're going to talk about that, which magnify participation and reciprocity to advance a fairer and more equitable world. And boy, could we use that now. So welcome, Jane.
Hey, thank you so much, Jeff and Craig. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you for the opportunity to share more.
Absolutely. Glad to have you.
So give us a little bit of the story, Jane, that brings you here today.
Yeah, gosh, where to start? Yes, as you said, I mean, back 2014, a couple years before that, I actually got access to leadership development and coaching when I was an executive at Mozilla, which you probably have heard of, the folks behind the Firefox web browser. Mm-hmm. And I had made it into the executive suite. And suddenly all of these great opportunities to develop my leadership became available. Hmm. And I had never even heard of what coaching was. didn't know it was a thing. It completely cracked my world open. And I thought to myself, two things. Firstly, I think I'm in the wrong job, which I think that happens a lot when people really get to fundamentally work on who they are and their values and what they're all about and to do in this lifetime. So I was thinking, wait a second, I think I might need to do something else with my life. And then secondly, wow, where was this opportunity 20 years ago when I was just starting out? Because I don't have any regrets, but I know I'd have made some very different decisions. And I really wanted that for other young women, and particularly in the social impact space and the development sector, where these opportunities to develop leadership are really few and far between. So ended up creating the Coaching Fellowship. There's a very long founding story that goes with that, which if you're interested, I'll share with you. But it was it was a happy accident. I wished I could say that I had this marvelous vision. I had a small vision, which with a lot of help from a community of people that rallied around us became what the Coaching Fellowship is today. But it really was a small acorn when I first started, as with everything, of course.
Yeah.
Well, Jane, let's dig into that a little bit. You know, you not only decided, so what I heard is you got some development. And you're like, yes. Wow, this is really cool. But it's later in your career that you get it. But you decided to create this opportunity, these resources for women, young women, mm-hmm. and particularly young women who are in the social change and social impact space. So that doesn't sound like an accident. Tell us why that group in particular.
Yeah. Well, thank you for asking me that. Well, for many years, I had been a mentor, you know, and had been particularly supporting men and women, really entrepreneurs in the impact sector. So people who are not necessarily building nonprofits, but they're building for-profit businesses, but with a social impact mission. And much of my career had been around community building. And how to create systems where someone will contribute, which helps to the greater contribution, which encourages more contributions and so on. So I do like to call them sort of flywheel systems. So I had been mentoring many folks in the social impact sector about how to really engage community and participation in organizations. But when I got access to coaching, I was blown away, and I realized this is something which I think still today, I mean, there's definitely growing, there's more appetite and more understanding what coaching is. But this was, you know, going back, you know, 7-8 years ago, it's not something that people ever heard of. And certainly in the impact sector, there was nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. So when I got trained as a coach and certified, some of the people who I'd been mentoring came back to me and said, will you coach me? And I wanted to give back, certainly. So offered a few pro bono coaching places. I decided that I would put together a small application form, wanted particularly to help the women because, you know, there was a lot of conversation at that time in Silicon Valley. This was, you know, sort of 2014. The diversity debate had been cracked open at that point by a young woman called Tracy Chow, which I'm not sure you've ever heard of her. She was this young Pinterest engineer who ended up becoming one of our fellows in our second program. But she had started a blog post which encouraged other Silicon Valley companies to blow the whistle on how many women were really in leadership positions and engineering positions, technology positions in Silicon Valley. And so that was just happening at the time. So I had a very strong lens on women's access and holding a question in my mind of what would happen if women, if young women got access to coaching much earlier than they did. Because we know that when they get later in their lives, they will hit glass ceilings, but also start to have a lot of internal debates about their worth, about so they're hitting systemic bias, but then there's also a lot of internal confidence issues and so on. So so I chose women. I chose the impact sector because it was something which I knew wouldn't generally have access to this. And about 41 women applied to be coached by me in 5 days when I put that out on my blog. And wow. It doesn't sound like a small number, but I honestly thought it would be half a dozen women, you know, that had been poking me for a few months. And and I was overwhelmed. And so I went back to the folks who I trained to coach with and said, hey, like, would you be willing to coach these wonderful women for pro bono? They came from 12 countries. They were across East Africa, you know, working in water space, in renewable energy spaces. And 16 of us said yes, that included myself. And we gave everyone a place because it wasn't a thing. And so you can do the math. We took more than one woman each. And off we went. And I was like, okay, I'm done. That was great. That felt good. Nice to help out. But over the course of 6 months, more young women in the impact sector kept coming back to me and asking when I was going to run another program. And I was like, well, it's actually not a program. But of course, to the outside, 40 plus women all starting to get this thing, which they had never had access to before. I mean, people were alight talking and sharing their experiences because they'd never had someone care about them enough to really work on their personal, unique, individual, you know, leadership style and what was up for them. And then more coaches kept coming, asking, when are you going to run another program? I'd love to help you. And I was like, well, it's not a program. but they too, as coaches, didn't get an opportunity to work with these impact leaders around the world, young women who were, I mean, I don't know what you were doing when I was 20, when you were 25, but I was not saving the world at 25. I was living in London, having a marvelous time. And, you know, so anyway, about 6-9 months later, I finally surrendered to building a program. And I said, I'll do one program and we'll see what happens. And yeah, we had 7, almost 800 applications.
Wow.
And we gave 50 women a place. Yeah. It was extraordinary. So, yeah. And as you said, Jeff, we've now put actually it's about 1,100 women through the program, and we run 2 big fellowship programs a year. And it's seen a lot of incredible things happen because these women finally were able to work on their leadership at a much, much younger part of their career.
So one of the things that I wonder about is when you're talking about the impact of not having these development opportunities for the young women, what are the types of impacts that that has for them? I mean, you talk about the glass ceiling, you talk about the inherent biases, and how is it that you help to transform them during that period of time?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I mean, systemic bias is still here. We're we're becoming more aware of it, and change is happening, but I just wanted to start with, there are still massive problems, I think, for women and minorities across the board. You know, what we see is women really are being willing to ask for what they're worth. So we see women who are willing to ask for pay raises, which they've never done before. When that comes to being in the nonprofit space, we know that a lot of, you know, fundraising is not for everybody, that's for sure. But being able to help women work on their confidence and getting really deeply connected to their mission and purpose means they'll go out, they'll go raise more money for their organizations. Yeah. We also see less burnout. So we actually did a longitudinal study with the University of Southern California. So they followed our fellows for 2 years. And I have to tell you, the one of the things that came back was that women, after It's I don't know why I'm telling you this, actually. It's not good for the coaching fellowship as it appears. But when the results came back, it appeared that the women no longer were so driven by social impact after they'd been part of our program. Hmm. And we were like, oh my God, this is awful. We're helping them get out of the sector. Like that's not what we were here to do. The translation of that with the psychology program at USC was that before our program, the young women we work with, their entire lives were driven by their job. And they, you know, they live for their job. They define themselves by their job. Everything is about their identity and what they do in the world. After they had been able to spend time working on themselves, then they could see, oh, there's more here. There's more. I am more than just my job.
Oh, fantastic.
And that is fundamental, absolutely fundamental. And, you know, like who I, like, I don't know, everything from what I do for sport and who my family are and my cultural heritage and all of these things. So I am no longer defining myself by this one piece, which means that they were more, you know, they had some objectivity and were not going to burn out. Well, the idea is the thread was then they would, there was more to life, you know, than their job. That was incredibly powerful. It was when I got the results back, as I said, we were just like, oh dear.
That's true empowerment.
That's awful. Yeah, thank you. Yes, Craig, I think so. Yeah, super proud of that.
So Jane, it's interesting. I guess it's surprising and not surprising that you choose to focus this investment in people in the nonprofit and impact space, because Craig and I have this personal bias that leadership is struggling in general, but I don't usually think of nonprofit space as where I go to learn about leadership. Now, I know some people who are great leaders in the nonprofit space, but they really stand out because there's frankly a lot of just caretakers, in my opinion, in that space. So not surprising, it makes sense. And it's interesting, I guess I'd like to know, when you talk about leadership in this space, what exactly is that? I think you've alluded to it about people working on themselves, but what are you helping them grow into?
It's a beautiful question. And multifaceted too, because I think that what's very unique about the coaching fellowship is this great gift that if anyone has had access to an executive coach and been able to work on themselves, it's such a gift. It really is. I drank coaching Kool-Aid, you can tell, but when you get to work on you, and the coach gets to work on you, like, wow, like that's really a true gift, I think. And so much of that is about, you know, leadership for me, leadership of self. So I'm, you know, how am I showing up in the world? Am I living my life on purpose? Am I living life according to my values? What is holding me back? So I can get clear on that so that I can keep stepping forward. It really, and I'm sure you talk about this all the time, is that when one gets to a point of knowing oneself so greatly, then we're just compelled to help every other living thing on this planet also reach its own potential. And these are women who are already doing, you know, they're already driven by the industry, right? Driven to help. And you said caretake death, and it's true. I mean, they are. They, you know, I think there's so much more power than in enabling more people to come forward, whether that's the communities they serve or their team members. So then it becomes about leadership of self, leadership of others. But it's, gosh, I could just talk for hours on this.
It sounds almost like it's the way you're talking about it. It sounds like almost like the self-care aspect of getting a massage. But we're getting a massage for our lives.
Whoa.
Because you have to step out of yourself and say, you know what? I'm going to treat myself. I'm going to accept that somebody else can help me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's that is true. Though there's a part. No, that's right. That's right. Yeah. I think, you know, it has to start with yourself and that willingness to be vulnerable, to look deep into yourself. Like that takes a lot of courage.
Yeah. Shane, my guess is if some people heard you or saw about the program, if they were willing to be their version of honest, they would say something to you like, you know what, this sounds more like personal development more than leadership development. Because there's a lot of people in this world that that's how they see this. It's not about leadership. Leadership is learning the tools and tactics. So what would you say to that person?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I think it's a both and, actually. I mean, you know, I like to say that what we do is we do whole person coaching. Because, you know, you're, if that's personal and professional development, you're not, you're still the same person when you go to work, right? And so whatever is going on for you in your personal life is going to affect what happens in your professional life. Oh, and vice versa as well. So for me, there's no difference. It is just all about you, you know, and who you are in the world. When I think about leadership, I mean, I've said this for a long time. So leadership means different things to different people, right? It's kind of like a tofu word. It just takes on whatever flavor sauce you put in the, I'm a vegetarian since my whole life. So, you know, and so, yeah, I really like the people who are like, this is all about the tools and things. And like, I really love to sit with them and kind of broaden their perspective and their horizons, because I think we can all be leaders. We don't need to run an organization or a team or even a project, right? To show up in our families as someone who is an example of living your best life, of living your life on purpose. Karen Kimsey House, she's the founder of co-founder of the Coaches Training Institute, or the Coactive Training Institute, which it's called now. And she says, you know, to live your life is a on purpose is a radical act. And, you know, when I think about leadership, I'm like, wow, like those people who are actually willing to be true to, I mean, was the 1,000-year, you know, to yourself be true, you know, is, you know, they're as much leaders as Fortune 500 organizations and Bill Gates, you know,
Well, let's talk about, you talked about early on the biases, some of the systemic issues, the challenges that women face. And my anecdotal evidence walking through this life is in the nonprofit space. It's kind of funny. People say people in nonprofits don't make any money. I know some people that run nonprofits that make incredible money. Nearly all of them are men. So my experience is the larger institutional nonprofit organizations, many of them are run by men. They're the leaders. And where women are showing up in this are the entrepreneurial startups, they're smaller organizations. Are we seeing a change in that yet, Jane?
I think it's slow. I really do. You know, part of it, and this is across, I know you said specifically the nonprofit sector, but across the for-profit, there's something they call the broken ladder, which is young women not being able to get their first leadership opportunity. The statistics are basically for every 10 men, only 7 women will get their first leadership position, which it doesn't sound like a big gap. But if you actually look at for Black women, I think it's something like 50-something percent, and for Latino women, it's even less than that. I think there's a lot of focus on trying to get more women into positions, senior positions in the C-suite and vice presidents and all this. But what we're really missing is, and in this, I don't always believe this is a pipeline issue for women. There are plenty of capable women out there, but I do believe the broken ladder, where is that really is a pipeline issue, because if there are less women getting their first start, that means that whole trajectory is inhibited. And gotcha. We see that in the nonprofit space for sure, because there's a lot of women who want to be in this sector. They are caregivers. They are motivated by education and healthcare and, you know, the environment, just, you know, more naturally perhaps. And then they can't, there are very few leadership positions in the nonprofit space as well. There's a lot of doers, and, you know, the management roles aren't quite as, there aren't as many than in the for-profit sector. But that initial start for me is where I'd like there to be more focus, particularly in the nonprofit space. And that is not changing yet.
Guessing from the way you're describing it, that a lot of the women in your program are working in impact organizations that are in early stages, because they're younger women. And I'm just going to guess that culturally, young women are not getting invited to lead more established nonprofits. That's my guess. Established nonprofits that are tapping, you know, women in their early 20s, for example, to lead them.
Right. Right. Thank you for the reminder. And yes, and you're quite right. Yeah. So we definitely have a lot of incredible impact entrepreneurs. You know, but it's very interesting because we've been doing this work now for 7 years. And if I take a woman like Sheila Warren, so Sheila Warren was one of our fellows out of the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, in 2015. At that time, she was kind of like the vice president of partnerships at a relatively small nonprofit called TechSoup Global. And they help nonprofits get access to, pardon me, technology products. So whether that was a database, CRM database, or other pieces of software which would help them run their nonprofit. And, you know, they managed a whole bunch of discounts from large corporations. So you could go to TechSoup and find products that were heavily discounted as a nonprofit. So she did that. She is a woman of color. She's three children and continued to do extraordinary things. And then just a couple of years ago, joined the World Economic Forum as their head of blockchain. So she did a career pivot, and we'll credit Coaching Fellowship to her stepping deeply into her leadership as a woman of color, as a mother, and as someone who is really kind of owning it in the field of technology and impact. You know, when I think about her now, she's in this influential position. So what we don't, you know, it's hard to see it right now when we work with a woman who's in her late 20s, let's say. But I'm curious, and we're just in the middle of it now, like what happens 10 years later? You know, because they are focusing on their own growth and stepping even more deeply into their leadership. And now they're getting noticed. So it does take some time, but I mean, I'm seeing glimmers of it. I couldn't put my name on it, but of course my wish is, and this is the whole point of starting Coach Fellowship, which the younger someone is when they can get access to themselves, then the trajectory will change later on and they will get tapped for these roles.
This is amazing. I guess I have had a very different perspective over the last week because my son just told me he's getting married. And so his future bride is a woman of color. And so just looking at the opportunities that she's going to have now, I'm listening with a different set of ears, I think, because now I want to make sure that she has access to everything that we're talking about. You know, it's been kind of a little bit at arm's length before, but now it's coming a lot more real. So I really appreciate the work that you're doing. So when you're talking about somebody like that, how can we help her get the kind of support in leadership that she would need.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And just to be clear, as a woman of color, Craig?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, something that we've learned both, and to be completely honest with you, so, you know, I founded this organization, and for the longest time, you know, people would say to me, and this was culturally in the beginning, the questions were, because you used to work a lot in the Middle East in the beginning. I had a lot of contacts in, say, Jordan, Afghanistan, Yemen. And so we worked in our very early days of Coach Fellowship. There were women from those countries. And they'd say to me, well, how is coaching different from a woman in Yemen as opposed to a woman in Los Angeles? And I'd say, well, you know, coaching is for everybody. We're just whatever you want to work on, the coach is going to help you work on. And I took this lens for many years. And it wasn't until maybe three, 4 years ago when we started to have more women of color who, asked, and then my head went to demanded, and they really did not demand. But I'm very proud to say that they really, you know, clearly asked, and to have a woman of color coach them, because if you know the industry, the coaching industry is predominantly, I'll say it for myself as a white middle-aged woman, that is a very large demographic of the coaches. So our coach community, if you looked at the pictures 3-4 years ago on our website of the coaches, you would see lots of white faces.
Wow. Okay.
And so yeah, something shifted and in the diaspora, and I think we're all not unawake to that now, where women of color started to ask for what they wanted, what they needed. And thank goodness they did, because we had a big wake up call.
Oh, which interesting.
Yeah. So we started actively recruiting coaches of color so that when the individual came into our program, we made sure that we could match them with someone who did have a shared experience and could potentially coach them a little bit more on what is a very different experience for women, wherever they are, you know, whether it's in the impact sector or not. But so that's something that we've worked really hard on these last years. So being able to provide women of color with access to coaches and leadership development tools which are right for them is absolutely critical.
Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. If you enjoy the Leadership Junkies podcast and you want to grow your leadership, we have a new course for you called Become a Confident Leader. In this course, we will share some of the keys to becoming more confident in your leadership and also to become more impactful. Go to cardavera.com/confident to find out more. See you on the inside. Welcome back.
You know, we're talking about nonprofit and impact space. And as I listen to this, Jane, it feels like we have different kinds of organizations, but the same leadership challenges, in that it's certainly about access, especially for earlier stage women in their careers, that they're not getting offered that generally. But I also know, and I won't name names, but I was recently talking to a friend of mine who works in the nonprofit space. He's a very strong leader, and there's an opportunity coming up to lead the larger organization. And I said, well, why don't you pursue that? That seems like you. And he said, no, they've already decided who that's going to be. And I said, well, who is it? He said, well, it's an internal person. It happens to be a woman who's older, probably in her 50s. And I said, and she's currently the COO. And I thought, now, for me, yes, I can see CEOs, you know, that when I see COO, I don't always think of the CEO. I just don't. That's not my natural progression. And I said, so how do you see that happening? He said, well, I think it should go great, except she has no empathy, no ability to communicate with people. She's horrible at building relationships. And they think she's amazing because she's an executor, literally. And I thought, I just sit here and go, oh my God, the blinders. And so to me, it could be a nonprofit, it could be for profit. I hear you talking about women working on themselves, empowering themselves. What are you offering them typically on the tool side? How are you helping them grow on the tool side, that and both, to be better, more impactful leaders?
Just a quick sidebar on your colleague. Did you mean his blinders or her blinders? Like, is there some bias? And because there's a double bind for women where selection. They're kind of, if they're, you know, assertive, they can, like, it comes off as aggressive. And
so, knowing this person, I would say, I thank you for bringing that up. I would say this is not a powerful, assertive woman. This is somebody who lacks empathy, because I think he would see that gap.
Yeah.
And to be honest, knowing our culture, very possible that that's not how she started, because as you know, there's a good number of women who said, if I'm going to succeed, I'm going to lead like men.
It's the only example they had.
And many of them are horrible examples.
Right, they're horrible examples.
No, it's true. No, it is. Right. Thank you. Thank you for saying. And you know, on the tool side, we're predominantly focused on the kind of the inside out game. Mm-hmm. So it's less, teaching you how do you be in the workplace setting, more like how would you be a good leader, which is make sure you do one-on-ones with your direct reports and make sure they have a development plan for themselves, you know, and very critical, but that's not our core competency as an organization. Mm-hmm. So they are much more the kind of internal tools of, understanding, again, back, which you might've said was the more personal development, but more the, okay, so I'm having I'm being reactive right now. So, and first of all, tool number one, understanding you're being reactive.
then, very important.
Just catch yourself just for a hot minute, and then be able to unpack, of course, what is that? Like, why am I being triggered? And so, I think it's so hard I really appreciate people who teach empathy, because I'm like, gosh, that's like a life project, surely. Because if you've not got it at the beginning, like, I feel like you have to have some kind of catastrophic event to get all humble, or of course, as you know, nature wants all different kinds of people, is that you're more left-brained, and I know that's all taboo talking right brain, left brain stuff, but you know, we do need more people who are, as we need also need people who are the executor. God, I hate to say that in air quotes, Jeff. Executor. It's being able to understand one another's differences and our kind of appreciating some of it, but that also needs her to come back and appreciate too. So I know I'm circling around your question on tools, that not so much like the hard and fast roles of leadership from our side. Yeah.
Well, you talked about empathy, and I love the topic of empathy, because I think it's one, as Craig and I have had many guests talking about how confusing it is. And one thing that I hear regularly, and I've put an end to it. I put a hard stop to it now. People regularly say, yeah, I know empathy is important, but you've got to be careful you're not too empathetic. And I have a hard pushback to that and say, I don't agree with you at all. I think it's not possible. You cannot be too empathetic, but you can be too compassionate, in the sense of not making the decisions you need to, not having the conversations you need to. But in their mind, and I think this is the dangerous part, they equate, I have to be able to have that direct, honest conversation with you, set a hard boundary, and that's why I don't want my empathy to get too far. Well, no, those are two different things. So talk about empathy, what it is and what it's not in leadership.
Yeah. And you brought up compassion too. So yeah, I think people do get those muddled muddled up. And what I see from women as well, I mean, is that we can be more naturally more empathetic. And from a woman's perspective, I think that they can be too empathetic to the point that they can lose themselves in it. Mm. So I, you know, just taking that woman's lens for a moment, the majority, I mean, and that's my humble opinion, of women are on the empathetic scale and can be too caring and too involved, and then almost lose themselves in that, you know, like then you're like, well, what's yours and what's mine, you know, because I feel so much like I would say for myself, you know, I feel other people's emotions greatly. And sometimes that can be just too much. So you have to figure out like what is like, how can I show up and be caring and trying to put myself in someone else's shoes and respectful, but also not give all of myself because I need to be able to get on with the day as well.
Well, that's a fascinating. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. Well, and just saying on the other side, you know, I'm just thinking of a person who I coached a couple of years ago, a gentleman, CEO of a company, who is empathetic, but kind of thought he had to kind of intellectualize it, you know, and would be like kind of trying to make rational decisions about how he interacted with people in their personal situations. And he'd be like, well, yeah, but if I talk to this person who I know her mother's, you know, going through cancer treatment, like, so he'd kind of almost try to bring like a strategy into empathy. And I'd be like, no, we don't do it. Like, you either are empathetic or you're not. You can't just like turn it on, you know, it's like not a tool. So I think people can go to that extreme as well, where they're like, okay, I'm in a one-on-one, so I should really ask them how they're doing. They kind of don't really want to.
We had one story from a podcast guest where he talked about a person that he worked with who clearly doesn't have the relationship building natural side of things. And so he figured out, hey, leadership is all about relationship building. And relationship building is about actually spending time with other people and caring about them and so forth. And he just put on his calendar, these are the things that I need to do. I need to spend time with these people. This is what I have to do to be an effective leader. He was trying to take a move towards that direction and at least say, okay, I understand that I am not naturally going to do this, so I have to make a plan for how I'm going to. And maybe that's this person's attempt at becoming more empathetic.
Yeah. And isn't that wonderful, actually? Yeah. That yes. You know, that recognizing that this would be helpful. I just remember in those early days, I think I try not to be judgmental, but it was sort of like, okay.
Yeah.
It's easier for some people than others, but at least they're trying, which is huge. Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting piece. And I actually realized I misspoke because earlier I said something about empathy, not being too empathetic, but being too compassionate. The word I meant was sympathetic.
Oh, right.
That was the word. Right. So I go into sympathy mode and I make decisions from a sympathy place versus an empathy place, right, which are very different. And it's interesting what you talked about, Craig, because I'm pondering that a lot about, does the motivator matter? Because some new clients of mine, the guy said to me, you know, I'm just not very good at remembering names. He was impressed that we had a session together. It was only 11 people. And he said, within 10 minutes, you knew everybody's name.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah. Okay. What?
That's a skill. He goes, well,
I'm not very good at names. And I said, well, let me ask you a question. Do you care about their names or do you think it's important to know their name? He said, well, it's important to know their name. I said, maybe that's the problem.
Mm.
You're great trying point. To remember their name because it's the thing you're supposed to do versus actually caring about them and their name and saying, I care enough about you to remember your name. And he said, wow, that's probably true because I'm using it as a tactic, not a way of being. And I hear, Jane, a lot of your coaching is taking people from tactics to ways of being and tapping into who they are and just being themselves.
Yes, I love that, Jeff. Yeah, I say very often, you know, it's, I think what we're helping people do, and I think you do as well, is to bring also the being into the doing, right? Is that if you're only doing, then, you know, that's like for the sake of what? But right. if you're only being, well, that can be a very nice intellectual, you know, stimulating conversation with no action. But we do, you know, being able to bring the being and the doing together, when you can become more conscious of who you are when you're doing yeah. something and your impact, then there's this deepen the learning forward the action, deepen the learning forward the action, right? Where it's this rhythm of it feels much more fluid and natural and yeah, more alive, more human.
Let me ask a question from as the non-professional coach here. I mean, I've been through coaching training and so forth, but that's not what I do on a regular basis. I'm more on the consulting side. So both of you are coaches, and we're talking about empathy and kind of showing the differences between there's empathy and being able to make decisions. And there's this place, and I think the fear comes in, okay, if I get too close to this person, I won't be able to be objective. If I get too close to this person, I'm going to be making a decision that's for that person rather than what's best for the company or what's best for my career. Is that what we're really talking about here?
Well, I'm going to jump in because something popped in my head.
Yeah, please.
I believe that part of the problem is they believe they're objective already. And the truth is they're not. People think that people love to believe they're objective. And if I go over here, I'm no longer objective, and they're not really objective. They're so layered with biases and unconscious biases and judgments. Now that's how I would approach it. So I'm curious to hear what you have to share, Jane.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, you know, the business of, you know, business is really people. Right. And I'm just like, when are we going to finally understand that? You're like, okay, you have all these people working for you and they're the ones doing the work, and yet it's your business objectives. I'm like, yeah, it's not going to happen with all these, you know, these folks don't, you know, feel appreciated and, you know, get to thrive and all these good things. So it breaks my heart sometimes when I, you know, when I would contemplate something like that, because I'm just like, God damn. Yeah. And you wonder why we still have problems. And I just saw someone post the other day on LinkedIn about how, you know, HR, human resources, or people manage, leaders and so on, are kind of being sidelined still, you know, and I think the comment was, gosh, if your head of people doesn't report to your CEO, like, think about that. You know,
right?
Like, so sorry, sidetracking a little bit there, but I'm like, gosh, like it's all together, and it's not an either or.
I want you to repeat that phrase that you talked about a little bit ago when you started getting your energy up. What was that you said again?
The business of people.
Business is about people, right?
The business of is about people.
I mean, it's people. That is so important. I think that's the core of what we really talk about. You know, is when you're a leader, you have to work with people.
There's a lot of books out at the moment, you know, about like humanizing leadership and like I'm just like, why do we have to have these conversations? Like, why is this so hard? I mean, I know we're leadership junkies here for sure. Right. And maybe there's a whole world out there. Well, there clearly is a whole world out there that doesn't quite get that yet.
But there are people, like to your point earlier, you know, right, left, right brain, left brain, or, you know, the thinker versus the feeler. And that's one of the things that I've worked through. I'm much more in my head than I have been in my heart until more recently. And that's something that I've really been learning and growing in. And not everybody understands the differences, and they think that everybody is just made the same way. And so when they approach things, you know, like the way I would used to approach things, it was, oh, okay, that doesn't make sense in my head, so it must not make sense. But if I were to look at it from a heart-based perspective and actually caring about the other person, then it makes sense in a very different way.
Totally. And life is full of contradictions.
Yeah, like right.
If you just stop for a second, like there's so much, which is, you know, I've read that as humans, you can hold multiple different perspectives at any one time,
right?
Asking yourself, like rationally, you know, there are 7 different perspectives that I'm currently holding about this topic.
Hmm.
But the one I choose is, you know, is the one that's the truth. And right. So it's, there's paradoxes everywhere. And so
yes.
Being able to hold the paradox, like I know it's asking a lot of people about that, or people talk about polarities, right? You know, this, it's both true. And that is a brain. But that's the beauty and the messiness of what it means to be human.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I'm listening to a book right now. For the second time, I went back to it because I just wanted to refresh it. And it's called The Righteous Mind. A wonderful book. Wow. It's a wonderful book. It's a frightening book. The degree of the depth of our biases. And they were saying, there's so much in it. And he was saying that people with higher IQs are better able to come up with reasons, a wider range of reasons to support an argument. Okay. However, typically they're able to do that for their side of the argument, not the other side. So they're always trying to find these correlations. And there's so much in there about, you know, I came away listening this morning about confirmation bias. And I mean, I'm just sitting here, my head wants to explode of, I want to send something out to invite the world to send me any evidence that there's no such thing as confirmation bias. Because if you accept that it's there, we can change this pretty quickly. But people think they don't have it. And that's the confirmation bias. You know, the ultimate, you don't know what you don't know. It's the most giant blind spot on the planet, I believe, in leadership, is this belief that what they believe is true versus being open to the possibility that they're missing something. Come on.
Yeah. Well, but what a thing you're asking, right? I mean, as a leader, you know, maybe of a company that is 25,000 people, you know, and you're supposed to have all the answers, right? And being willing to put oneself out there and say, help me, you know, where am I blind? Where am I, you know, how else can I see? Like, wow, like that's some pretty special leadership right there. And gosh, do I wish that for everyone who has that kind of responsibility.
Well, I would like to follow up, Jane, on something Craig was talking about to get your take on it. There are probably thousands of assessments out there, and there's right brain, left brain, you know, there's this, I'm a thinker, feeler, all these things. And the one concern I have is that we can fall into the trap that we look at the assessment and determine that if I'm this, and that's my natural state, in order for me to be over here, it's this huge lift. But I'm not fully convinced that those assessments tie to the concept of empathy. Like someone who says, I'm a thinker versus a feeler, therefore I'm less empathetic. I don't buy that at all. I know people who are thinkers who are very empathetic. I think it's easy. I think there's this trap that we fall into these assessments and then decide, well, this is just how I am. And I think empathy crosses these lines, and it's a trap to say that it doesn't.
So on the assessment side, I mean, I think it can be useful, you know, especially like with giving voice and sort of names and an ability to self-reflect, but like there can be like this over rotation as you're, you know, then you're kind of in a box, and we should never be, we're far too complex individuals to be in any one box. And I do agree with you too, the ability to change. Like I know there's like, I don't think you can change your values. You really don't. Some might become more obvious to you as you live go through your life, you know. But ultimately, you know, if we have a desire to become better at something, or you have an interest in something, then humans are amazing. Like, they can change and adapt. And I mean, we've been doing it for millennia. But it is more, am I willing to, do I want to, and to what, right? For the sake of what? You know, coming back to coaching or having someone in your life who can help you unpack that is, I think, is super important. Otherwise, yeah, you'll just kind of go, and I don't mean to bash on StrengthFinder, but, you know, this, or Adam Grant just came out with this new version as well, right? With all these tools. And so you've just kind of done it, and, you know, oh, I'm X, but with no conversation, no context, no deep interrogation of, well, firstly, is this true? But then what does that mean for me? And what am I going to actually do with it?
I guess my takeaway on that is, because I know a lot of people still refer to and use the DISC assessment. I'm going to have to go back and look at it. I'm not sure empathy is listed under any of them. Yet I think it's easy to decide that, you know, if you're a D, you can't be empathetic. Or if you're a C, you're not empathetic. Oh, the I's are empathetic, but I know I's who aren't empathetic at all.
Yeah.
And to have it be more of this overlay that what does it look like to be an empathetic D? What does it look like to be an empathetic I, an empathetic S and C, or whatever assessments we're using? I think it's so easy to fall. I'll just keep calling it a trap, that there's this easy answer. And I think the easy answer is decide that people matter and act accordingly.
And I think that's the thing, though, Jeff. I think from my experience growing up, definitely a high T versus F, you know, thinker versus feeler on the Myers-Briggs scale. And what's happened for me over time is realizing that people are important. I have made a conscious choice to make sure that they are important to me. And understand what empathy means. There's been a lot of training that my wife has done with me, let me tell you. And so along the 33 years that we've been married, I've had to learn a lot of lessons about tone of voice and actually just listening, being present, which I've learned a lot from you, Jeff. You know, there are a lot of things that I've learned over time that have brought into my toolkit that it all does come down to what you just said, which is, because I care about people, I'm going to learn how to use these tools and be more of the authentic person that I want to be.
Well, this is a great conversation, Jane. There's this question I want to close with. In the nonprofit space specifically, generally the keys to the kingdom are held by the board. Or an executive committee of the board. They're making decisions about who's in leadership. They make decisions about whether they get leadership development support or not. They make those decisions. So my question to you, Jane, is, you have an opportunity right now to say something to these boards. What do the boards need to hear?
Firstly, I think the evidence speaks for itself. These days, I mean, putting more women in leadership positions increases impact, increases bottom line. When you look at diversity of background and ethnicity, again, increased innovation. Why would you not bring more? If you want to have greater impact in your org, why would you not do that?
Yes.
If you might allow me just a second, the one thing I would love to say, and this is more directed actually at funders, women's organizations are some of the most underfunded. Mm. So not only the women leaders of nonprofits and for-profit startups and so on, getting absolutely just a couple of percentages of the money out there, which is available, but also for funders in the nonprofit space going and considering that a women's organization is even worth funding, like those, that is a big sort of flashlight for me, where I'm like, goodness, how is this, you know, again, not being taken seriously? So That's my little rant on the side. And I would also say to board members, so yes, within the organization, look at the leadership. Look at the leadership within yourself as well. How many of you are sitting around the table, and is there a person of color? Hmm. How many women do you have on the board?
Yeah.
You know, because you yourselves need to also just been talking about not being blindsided. Like, we may be missing out. Are we a representative of the organization that we're serving?
Yeah.
You know, so if you're helping, if you're on the board of an organization in Africa, do you have any people from Africa on your board?
Right.
That white savior thing is a whole thing, which I could get really ranty about too. But thanks for letting me bring that in both.
No, that's what this is all about, Jane. Thank you. Thank you for bringing your wisdom. We always want to wrap up and allow our guests to share anything that particular you want to promote today.
Thank you. You know, I'd love to promote a program from the Coaching Fellowship, which will be open later in June. It's the first the inaugural program of the Nightingale Fellowship. We were very fortunate to get some funding from Jack Dorsey's nonprofit Start Small to build a coaching program which is serving direct practice professionals. So these are young women leaders working on the COVID front lines and in COVID recovery. And so our applications will be open June 21st. So if you know a young woman who's been working supporting in a direct care capacity, which is kind of touching someone, actually physically touching, whether you're you're a healthcare practitioner, you're a homeless shelter person, you're a food bank worker. This is a fellowship that would be open to you. And the program is all about helping you build yourself back stronger. We're so grateful to everything you've been doing. And we're trying to create an opportunity for self-care. And they're already resilient, that's for sure. But they being able to recover and come back stronger going to take some work. So thanks for letting me share that. And that's it. Our website address is tcfs.org. tcfs.org.
So we will share that. And what is the best way for people to connect with you, Jane?
Oh, sure. So LinkedIn is, just super easy. There is only one Jane Finette, which of course is only just one Jane Finette in the world, but you'll easily find me. I'd be delighted to hear from you. Please, if you do connect, just drop me a little line, of that you heard me on your podcast. That would just be great for some reference. And yeah, I'd love to connect.
Wonderful, Jane. We always wrap up with a question or two, and in the interest of time, I'm going to just close with this question for you. Talk to us about an impactful role model for you. Who was that, and what was the key to that?
Thank you. Thank you for asking me this. And I have to tell you, it's Mitchell Baker. So Mitchell Baker was the co-founder of Mozilla, along with Brendan Eich. And I've had the great honor and privilege of working for Mitchell for about 10 years off and on. I was her chief of staff for a good three of those. And the reason why, and when I first started working for Mozilla in 2007, which feels like a lifetime ago, but what Mitchell demonstrates, like the way she's built Mozilla is really how she lives her life. And that is one of transparency, of openness, of multiple alternative perspectives. Like she will say all the time, where am I being blindsided? Help me see. She also would take a long time to answer questions, which is when I first got to know would be so awkward. But what I realized is she's being incredibly thoughtful about what she's saying, because as a leader of that, sort of capacity and responsibility, she always wanted to make sure that she was giving the best possible advice and answer that she could. But her, the way that she has built distributed systems which is how I've built coaching fellowship, by helping people lead from the edges, being able to really push leadership right to the edge so that everyone can contribute. We started with talking about flywheel systems. I learned all of that from Mitchell, which is when you can empower everyone to participate, they will show up and then some. You know, like it's when you try to control people, you're only going to get so much.
So good.
Well, thank you, Jane. Thanks for being here, for sharing, and most important, thank you for the work you do in the world.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the wonderful opportunity.
If you like this podcast, you'll love the Cartavera Tribe. The Cartavera Tribe is a community of growth-committed leaders who want to connect, engage, and grow themselves, their people, and their businesses. Cartavera is a leadership development ecosystem with training, coaching, assessments, and events to challenge you and help you grow. And the Cartavera Tribe is a membership like none other. You'll get live access to Craig and Jeff where you can ask questions, as well as masterminds where you can get answers from other leaders who've already solved your greatest challenges. You'll have access to additional interviews and a variety of courses, tools, and resources to help you achieve your biggest goals. We have monthly game days where we have challenges and competitive games to help you grow your leadership capabilities. And you'll get a personal growth Sherpa who will guide you to help you reach your growth goals. To find out more, go to cartavera.com. That's CARDIVERA.com. See you on the inside.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.